One question I get asked a lot about in the Healed Being program is if it can save my relationship. Yes, it can, but only under one condition. You actually do the work, and they have to have love in their heart. If they have it, there's always a chance. I'm here to help you love people in the healthiest way possible. If you've been hurtful to someone you love, visit healedbeing.com. Life presents the toughest challenges. Every day you are faced with decisions that test your ability to express who you really want to be in this world. We're told to keep saying affirmations and keep thinking positively, but what do you do when that stuff doesn't work? Welcome to the Overwhelmed Brain, where you'll learn to make decisions that are right for you so that you can create the life you want now. Hello, this is Paul Coliani, and I want to help you learn the skill set you need to deal with life's challenges in the most emotionally intelligent way. This show consists of my personal opinions and is meant for informational purposes only. Always seek a professional for your mental health and well-being. I am glad you're here. Thanks for joining me today. I'm going to talk about two things. One is a relationship question that I got, and another is an anxiety question I got. So if you can relate to one of those, which is probably 90% of the population can relate to either or of those, then stick around. I'm going to get right into this first question. I'm going to go into the relationship question. Person wrote, "Hi, I was hoping you could give this a go in the TOB podcast." I will. I've been in a relationship with my partner, and I am significantly younger. Despite this age gap, I feel like I'm in much more control emotionally. My partner has your old tendencies. He can be quick to anger, irrational, and gives me the silent treatment when he's upset. For years, I've dealt with it and was always the patient one, the rational one, and the one who could control anger. And he knows that, and he appreciates it. However, I find myself holding a lot in emotionally because it feels like I have to be perfect. A few times I've shown any pain I have, he tells me that it's too much and he can't handle it. He goes into panic mode because he can't handle chaos, even though he himself is chaotic. I regress and I hold back. And lately, with a dip in my mental health, I find myself lonely and regretful when I show it. He loves me. I know he loves me, but something is holding him back from helping me. Okay. Thanks for sharing that. And yes, I used to have some of these tendencies. Silent treatment was my specialty, unfortunately, because it hurt the people I loved, and they loved me, and they didn't know where I was. They would try to ask me, you know, what's going on? Where are you? I feel alone. That's what they would say. I feel alone. And I used that, and I'm going to tell this person right now, I used that. Maybe not consciously, somewhat consciously, but not. I used it somewhat consciously as a manipulation because I wanted the person I was with, my partner, to feel bad or guilty so they would dote on me. I mean, it's a very emotionally abusive thing that I did, and the silent treatment in this used in this way, it can be an abuse behavior. And it sounds like that's what he's doing too, whether he's conscious of it or not. But the silent treatment is a way to make the person feel alone and wrong and bad. And if the other person is sympathetic and empathetic and supportive and loving and caring and kind and generous, if you're all those things, the silent treatment works. It works on caring people because the caring person doesn't want the other person to feel bad. And if they go silent, they think they feel bad. And the other person who's doing the silent treatment probably does feel bad. But the silent treatment is a coping mechanism that when I was doing it, I developed a long time ago because I found out it worked. I found out that they treated me the way I wanted to be treated, and it worked. And they would also do behaviors or not do behaviors that I didn't want them to do because I was silent. Meaning, if I made them feel bad or guilty for doing something I didn't want them to do, they would do it less. At least that was my belief. They might do it while I'm not looking, but I believed that doing the silent treatment was a way to control them to do what I wanted them to do. If you've never heard me before, you're probably thinking, wow, this guy, this guy sounds like a total jerk. I was. I have been doing this show for a long time, and I've been very transparent about my past. I used to be emotionally abusive, and that ruined every single relationship that I was ever in. It was always toward my romantic partner, never toward anyone else. I was charming toward everyone else. I was kind, but toward my romantic partner, even though I was nice in a lot of ways and generous and supportive and loving, I was also a jerk. I was abusive. And it took a lot of healing. Well, let's put it this way. Let's put it in sequence. It took a lot of losing relationships. It took a lot of loss to get to the point where I finally decided that I needed to heal. I finally decided that this needs to stop. And at first, I blamed the other people in my life. I blamed them for leaving me. And then when I got married and I thought, hey, marriage is forever. This is great. Now I can settle down. And the divorce came. I realized maybe something else is going on. Maybe it's not my partners that are the problem. Maybe it's me. And I was right for the first time. I was right that it was me. I was doing all these bad behaviors. And I decided that I was the common denominator for all the problems in my life, at least relationship problems, and that in order to change how my relationships turn out, I needed to change. I needed to heal. For the first time, I took responsibility for all the problems I caused. And so when I hear or read an email like this, I see myself, my old self, in there, and I immediately know what's going on, because when you have experienced something like that and you've healed from it, whether it's trauma, dysfunction, toxicity, emotional abuse, whenever you've done the thing and you've healed from the thing, you recognize the thing. And so she's citing all of these behaviors that I used to do, and she probably has listened to me many times before because she pegged me, my old self. She knew that I could probably relate to this, and she's right. Now, I did the silent treatment as a method of control. Back then, however, I didn't realize exactly that it was abusive. I mean, I had no idea it was abusive. Now I know. And I know it was abusive because the silent treatment was used as a form of control or manipulation. And whenever anything is used as a form of control or manipulation in order to change someone that you or is in your life, then that is something that needs to be addressed inside you if you are doing that. Since this other person is doing it, he needs to work on that himself. Now, what she is saying, the last line was interesting. She said, I know he loves me, but something is holding him back from helping me. Now, I don't know what you meant by helping you. Maybe just coming to terms or helping you fix whatever's going on or heal whatever's going on. I think that's what you meant. I think what you mean is, let's work on this together. You're not helping me at all. I'm trying to help you, or I'm trying to work with this or work with you on this, but you're not helping me, so let's work on this. That's what I think she meant. And here's my thought on this, is that because he's doing what I would call poor coping mechanisms, he is using poor coping mechanisms, he has poor coping skills, or I should say unhealthy coping mechanisms or skills, because he's doing that, the reason he's doing that is because they work. How you respond to a person that has poor coping mechanisms will determine how they act in the future. Let me say that again. How you respond to someone's poor coping mechanisms or unhealthy coping mechanisms is how they will act in the future. That's how they'll behave. So if you respond to someone's, for example, silent treatment by doting on them more, by trying to make them feel better by asking questions, what can I do? If you do that now, then what ends up happening is they get what they want from you and they do it again as a method of control in the future. So I'm going to tell this person who wrote, I hope you're listening now, because this is important. You tell me what your age is, and I'm not going to say it here because I'm going to keep your confidentiality here, but you're not that old. You're fairly young, and you may not have a lifetime of relationship experience. As you go through life and get into relationships, and maybe this will be your final relationship, that'll be great. But as you get into more and more relationships, what you end up learning is that people respond the same way until accountability is applied. And what I mean by that is if someone gives you the silent treatment and you act the same way every time they give you the silent treatment and they have no consequence for that silent treatment, and in fact, they get what they want, they do it again. So this is just a repetitious cycle of toxicity or dysfunction. And when it happens in the first relationship, you can learn so that when you get into the next relationship, you don't fall for it anymore, or you realize, oh, if somebody does a silent treatment, I'm not getting into that kind of situation again. So your next relationship should improve. They don't always, but they should improve. So that's why I was commenting on your age, and nothing against that. I mean, when you're younger, you just don't have the lifetime of experience of relationships if you've gone through many. Some people are just married their whole life and they only have one relationship. So you may actually have more experience than those people regarding other relationships. But because of the questions you're asking, you're probably experiencing this, I'm guessing, for the first time from a partner. If you're not, and this is the second or third time or whatever, then it needs to be handled really quickly so you don't get into this type of situation again. And so that's neither here nor there. I think you understand that, and that's why you're asking these questions. But let's just talk about a couple of the things that you asked about, which is, one, the silent treatment. How do you respond to that now? That's my question to you. I know I can't hear your answer, but anyone listening that has to deal with this, how do you respond to it now? I can tell you what my partners did. They wanted to find out where I was. They treated me kind. They were very gentle. You know, they were very supportive. They were loving. They were caring. And I ate that up. As a former emotionally abusive person, I ate that up. That's what I wanted. I realized, wow, the silent treatment gets me all this positive stuff. And it's my way of making them feel guilty so they don't do the behavior anymore. And if you haven't heard me say this before, it never works. Whatever you don't like about someone else's behavior, if you do any type of emotionally abusive behavior to stop it, it never works. They either don't stop the behavior, or they hide it from you, or they distance themselves from you, which they always do with any type of emotionally abusive behavior. There are things that you can try, and the more you try to control, change, or manipulate them, the worse it gets. So in this person's case, the more he does this, the worse it's going to be for her. I'm assuming it's a her. I think it is because of her name. But regardless, whoever this happens to, how you respond to it is how they act in the future. So this is where I'm going back to it. Silent treatment, how do you respond to it? That was my question. And when you respond to it that way, what is the response you get back? Is it positive? Do they stay silent? I mean, I used to stay silent for a day or more. So all day long, it was cruel. It was really cruel because the silent treatment is also meant to withhold love and attention. And I have talked about this a lot, so you don't hear the pain in my voice thinking about that time in my life, but there was a lot of pain because I felt so guilty after I learned what I was doing. Because anyone that disappears from you, you know, emotionally speaking, it is painful. So I put my wife and my other partners in my life through a lot of pain. I really felt bad once I learned what I was doing, because that's hard if somebody doesn't know where you are emotionally. And so I feel bad about that. But you don't feel bad in the moment because you're trying to get your way. And that's what I'm mentioning here, is that it sounds like he's trying to accomplish something. So let me ask you this next question. What is he trying to accomplish by giving you the silent treatment? You may say, he's just sad, or he can't handle it, which is what you're saying in your email, actually. He's overwhelmed. Well, there's always a reason to behavior. I mean, overwhelmed, when you're overwhelmed, title of this show, when you're overwhelmed, you have to cope. You figure out a way to cope. That's what I was talking about earlier. The silent treatment is a way to cope. The problem is it hurts other people. They don't know where you are. And it's not necessarily a healthy response, at least in this case. I mean, there are silent treatments where you just need to process. And there may be some of that going on here too, but it doesn't sound like it in this case. It sounds like he goes silent when you're about to share something that's personal to you and hurt. Maybe you're hurting. Maybe there's an emotional thing going on for you. And he says, I can't handle your emotions. And he wants to get away. And then he goes silent. Let me just make a quick comment on that. That sounds like an excuse for him to not take responsibility for any hurt that he caused you, or not take responsibility for anything that he did to you or said to you. It almost sounds like an excuse that he doesn't want to deal with that. And if you were to say, you know, when you said this to me, it really hurt my feelings. If he goes silent after that, that's somebody not wanting to take responsibility. I don't want to take responsibility for me hurting you. So I don't want to hear it. And the only way I can get through this is to be silent so it goes away. So that might be happening in your case. But let me come back to these questions. What do you think he's gaining from doing the silent treatment with you? That's an important question. I want you to think about it, and don't just jump into, I know he's overwhelmed and that's why he does it. What do you think he has to gain? And you can figure out what he has to gain by what you do after the silent treatment has been going on for a while, or he jumps into it, whatever. What do you do, or what do you say? And what happens after the silent treatment is over? What do you do? What do you say? Do you get along now? Is everything better now? Do you then talk about the emotional stuff? Or was the silent treatment enough of a delay to get past the emotional stuff that you wanted to share so that he can move on in life without having to deal with any personal responsibility about maybe making you hurt or making you feel bad or taking the blame or taking any responsibility for anything? Is he good at taking responsibility? That would be my next question. Is he good at taking responsibility for things? Oh, I messed up. I'm so sorry. That was my bad. Oh my God, I didn't mean to hurt your feelings. I'm so sorry. That was my bad. Well, hopefully he would apologize better than that, but you know what I mean. If he hurts your feelings, if he betrays your trust, if he does anything, if he messes up, does he say, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to do that or say that. You know, please, let's work this out. Let's talk about this. Tell me what's on your mind. My feeling, he doesn't do any of that. My feeling is, oh, I can't handle it. I got to go silent. There, I'm in peace now because I'm in silence and I don't have to take any personal responsibility for this. What a wonderful place to be. And she's doting on me. She's loving on me. She's rubbing my back. This is wonderful. That's a secondary gain to emotional abuse. He's gaining something from the abusive behavior. This is why it's so important to know and understand what you do that continues to allow him to do what he's doing. Because here's the thing. Here's where I'm going with this. I remember when I was doing something. I think my wife and I were in a grocery store. When I was married, my wife and I were in a grocery store, and I had a real problem with when she ate junk food, when she ate sugar, and I was a real jerk about it. I would say things, I would give her that look, And it was awful. I shouldn't have done any of that stuff, but that's who I was, and that's what I did. I would just give her a bad look or a dirty look. And I remember when she was eating something in a grocery store once, and I looked at her and I said, you know, I'm feeling really triggered right now. I think I was trying to be honest. I think I was like first step into honesty and vulnerability, but she was done with me. She had heard all the critical and judgmental stuff that I said, and she had seen all the looks, and she'd been through all my silent treatments, and I was using an old manipulation tactic I didn't know was manipulative back then. It was just the way I coped, but looking back, it was definitely manipulative, because when I said it, my goal was to make her feel guilty so that she would stop doing behaviors I didn't want. And so I remember I said something, I was triggered or something like that, and I told her this, and my intention, now looking at back in hindsight, was to make her feel guilty. And I remember she gave me a look, and she was angry. And she just put it in her mouth, and it was almost like she's saying, F you, I don't care. And she just ate it in front of me. It was like she wasn't going to tolerate it. She had enough, she was done. And she just stuffed it in her mouth and looked at me like a big F you. And wow, that had an impact. And the reason it had a good impact on my behavior, because what I was doing was trying to make her feel guilty so that she'd stop the behavior. But when she just put it in my face like that, there was suddenly a consequence to my judgmental, critical self. Meaning my behavior. There was a consequence to doing that behavior. And believe you me, I never did that behavior again. I did other behaviors, but she wasn't privy to my tactics back then. But when that happened, I understood, wow, this is bad. I'm not going to do that again. And I wish she did that for everything. I wish she just stuffed it in my face and said, too bad. If you don't like it, you can leave. I wish she had done that. And I'm not saying that she was responsible for doing that. It was definitely my responsibility to make the changes and heal. I wish she had done that to help me change. But again, I'm not putting that on her. But I am saying this to someone that might be in this situation, that the way she responded caused me to change my behavior. And she didn't know enough about emotional abuse to understand that to stop the pattern, you have to stop your old reactions or your old responses. And so when I got that response from her, I had to change what I was doing or stop what I was doing. And I have found the best way to break a toxic pattern like that is when somebody just looks at you and does or says something like, too bad. If you don't like it, leave. I'm not saying those are the exact words, but it's definitely an attitude. I'm sorry you don't like it. Tough. If you don't like it, that's not my problem. That would have been great. I think if she had said that, that would have changed me. Again, not putting it on her, but I think about if that happened today. If I was that way and my girlfriend did that, well, that's too bad. Then what choice do I have but to accept it or leave? That's really what it comes down to. You accept that that person is never going to change, or you leave. So I'm not necessarily giving this advice to the person who wrote. I'm saying that the way you're responding now isn't working, and it's even probably exacerbating it and letting it continue. Not that you're responsible for his behavior. I'm not blaming you for this. But I am saying that it will continue and it will repeat if you continue doing the same thing. So what can you do? You can be like my ex-wife. You can definitely just put it in his face and say, sorry, if you don't like me having emotions, nothing I can do about it. You just have to deal with it. And that might make him realize that, oh, this old pattern of mine doesn't work anymore. And if I have to deal with it, that's tough, but it is something I have to deal with. So maybe I need to deal with it. But what we end up doing, unfortunately, is inadvertently enabling people's behaviors. Again, I'm not blaming you for this. I'm not blaming you for his behaviors. But we just have to be careful how we respond, because we can inadvertently enable certain behaviors from other people by not providing accountability or consequences. There's no accountability, it sounds like, for what he's doing. Otherwise, he wouldn't continue doing it. So what is your accountability? You know, you can start this. You can start making this change very subtly. For example, if he goes silent again, or when he goes silent again, you decide to say something like this. Hey, it looks like you need some time, so I'm just going to leave you alone and I'll be working on this. Instead of doing this, oh my God, are you okay? I'm so sorry. Oh, I know it's overwhelming for you. Because this is clearly something that he believes works, or maybe it does work, and you're starting to put the pieces together now, but I really want you to consider changing your response to certain things. So if he starts doing something that blocks you from expressing yourself emotionally, holds you back from being your true self, then you might have to have a different response when he reacts. And, you know, you said he goes into panic mode. Well, what do you do when he goes into panic mode? Oh my God, I'm so sorry. I'll back off. If you do that, you need to change that. You need to change that, unless he's dangerous. I mean, if he's violent, it doesn't sound like he is, but if he's violent, I'm not recommending you do any of this. You might have to seek shelter, but it doesn't sound like you're saying that. It just sounds like he's just emotionally insecure and he doesn't know how to handle things. He doesn't have healthy coping mechanisms, and the way he copes is to hopefully change others so that they don't put any pressure on him to take responsibility for himself and his own emotions and things like that. So what can you do differently? And it may just be not reacting emotionally and not being so kind and caring and supportive when he goes into that mode. It's somewhat like training a child that has a temper tantrum. If the child has a temper tantrum and every time they have a tantrum, we say, oh, I'm so sorry, are you okay? Oh, are you okay? Not saying you shouldn't do that. I'm just saying we have to be careful when children do certain behaviors and we coddle them until they stop that behavior. It's like the dog that continues to cry until he gets a snack. Oh, he's crying. I'll give him another snack. Oh, he's crying again. I'll give him another snack. Oh, he's crying. Oh, because the crying works. So we have to change that trigger response, that stimulus response, really. Like, what is the stimuli here? His behavior is the stimuli for your behavior, and what you do next will facilitate what he does next, maybe in the future. So I need you to just kind of take an inventory of what happens when he does something and what you do in response to that something. You said he knows you, loves you, but something is holding him back. I'm willing to bet if your responses are less emotional, still connected, you know, I love you, I'm going to give you some space, and when you're ready, we'll talk about this. This is something I didn't tell you. When you're ready, we'll talk about this. And if he says, I'll never be ready, well, you know, I need to express it. This is where you have to become a little bit assertive. But what you're doing is, and this is probably my final word on this, what you're doing is giving him the space to be himself, go deal with it in his own way, but you're not responding the same way you used to respond, and you're just backing off. You're not giving him anything. You're just backing off. Okay, you need to deal with it, then you'll be over there and I'll be over here. And when you're done dealing with it, let me know. This is a very non-emotional response, and it shows love and care for the person that is going through their thing. He may need to process stuff. He may be very sensitive. I'm not putting him down for this, but I do believe that there are behaviors that he's doing that are meant to be controlling, whether he knows it or not, because he wouldn't do it over and over again unless he got something from it. So he is having some sort of gain or benefit from these behaviors. And when you become more non-emotional and you allow him to be that, but you go away and don't fall into that trap, because I believe that's probably what it is, don't fall into that trap, and then say, when you're done processing, let's return to this because I really need to express this. And if he doesn't give you a chance, he says, oh, I can't hear it. I can't take it. I'll be too overwhelmed. Then you can say, what can you say? I'll call one of my guy friends because I need a guy's perspective. He's not going to like that. I'm not saying you should do that, but that just came to mind. You know what? If I can't even express this stuff to you, a guy that I want a guy's perspective, then I'm going to have to call another guy and do it. I'm not saying you should do that, but, you know, it might get him out of his funk. It might break him out of his spell, but I'm not saying you should do that. However, I do think that you need to just take an inventory of what you do, how you respond, how you react, and after he does what he does, just back off. Okay, you need to process that, and then you come over here, and then definitely request that you need to talk about it, because it's building up in you. And if you aren't allowed to express things, then you will never be able to get it off your chest, and you need someone that is a good shoulder to cry on and will be strong enough for you. Because if you have to wear the emotional pants in the family, he is never going to stand up and wear them for you. You can't be the only one wearing the emotional pants in the family. You need to be able to talk to each other and express to each other. It needs to be a balanced relationship. And if there's no balance because he never wants to hear your side of things or allow you to express yourself, then it's just going to go nowhere fast, and you're going to go from regretful to resentful, and you may already be there, unfortunately. But this is why you asked, and we're hoping to get into a better space. I'm hoping you get into a better space in this relationship. So I hope this gives you something to work with. Thank you so much for writing, and I appreciate you. We'll be right back. I'm going to read you another message about someone going through something else, and I hope I can help them. I hope I helped you. We'll be right back after this. You know, in the next segment, I'm going to talk a little bit about anxiety, and one of our sponsors today, BetterHelp, I mean, they're professionals at helping people with anxiety. They'll help you with almost anything that you're going through because they are an online therapy service that offers video, phone, and even live chat-only therapy sessions. I remember what anxiety feels like. I rarely feel it now, but, you know, it took work. It took work to get there, and I didn't do it all by myself. I did some of it, but I didn't do it all by myself. And I remember feeling depressed and anxious right after a long-term girlfriend broke up with me. I needed therapy. I needed to talk to someone. And I tell you what, it is so helpful to just share everything, express everything that's going on with you, and then walk away and let them have it. Give it to them. Express yourself. Let it out. Let it go. And that's what they help you do. BetterHelp helps you take care of your mind. I mean, that's what this show is all about. It's like taking care of your car. If you had the same one your entire life, how are you going to do it? You're going to maintain it. That's how our brains work. If we don't maintain our brain, it might do something we don't want it to do. I hope not. It can happen. We want to make sure we take care of our minds. And BetterHelp is one of those ways to do it. And as a listener of The Overwhelmed Brain, you get 10% off your first month if you go to betterhelp.com/brain. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/brain. I want to make sure you have the healthiest brain possible. And in between your BetterHelp sessions, you can call your best fiend. Not your best friend, call your best fiend, or at least bring up the Best Fiends app. That's friends without the R, Best Fiends. It is a free-to-download casual mobile puzzle game. I have been playing it for over a year now, and my girlfriend plays it more than I do because, I don't know, she has time. She has more time than I do, but we both love it, and she is farther than I am because she said something last night as she was playing it that I never heard of. She said, now I have these beehives, and I got to use these beehives right, or I got to use them in a strategic way. This is what happens. You keep coming back to this game because they introduce something new and you think, I'm not going to let these slugs get to me. And that's what she was doing the last time I saw her. So haven't seen her since. I'm kidding. But she enjoys the game just as much as I do, and her mom's on it. I like to turn everyone onto the game, and I want to share with you a fiendish affirmation. Enough is never enough. Should we be satisfied with enough? No, enough is never enough. That's why Best Fiends keeps offering more and more levels, more stuff to do, more strategies, more fun, more stuff all the time. So I want you to check it out. You can download Best Fiends for free from the App Store or Google Play. Plus, you can even earn more with $5 worth of in-game rewards when you reach level 5. That's friends without the R. Best Fiends. Download Best Fiends today. Welcome back. Like I said, I'm going to read an email. This person's going through some anxiety, some other stuff too. And let's just see where we go with this. We got a lot going on here. It says, Paul, I've struggled with anxiety, OCD, and most recently depression my whole life. I take Zoloft. I've always pushed through and been able to work and provide for myself. The pandemic exacerbated all of my issues to the point that I quit my job of 20 years and don't leave my house unless it's to be with family outdoors while I wear my mask. I have a very real phobia of COVID. I'm very isolated and lonely. One of my relatives snapped at me at a family get-together recently when I asked that his partner wear a mask inside the house only because our mom isn't vaccinated and is a senior citizen. It was a big blow-up. He yelled at me, or he yelled that everyone is tired of me. He swore at me. He screamed at me to get over it. I told him that my anxiety isn't something I can get over, just as his son, who has an issue that I won't name, keep confidentiality, and the son has an issue that they can't get over either. Now they won't speak to me because they said, how dare I compare my anxiety to their son's issue. I love their son so much, I feel misunderstood and now vilified. Help. Wow. So thank you for sharing that. So sorry you're going through all this. So you have a lot of challenges, and obviously I would recommend you talk one-to-one with somebody about this, but I'm going to give you my take, and if I were in your shoes, what would I do? That's kind of how I approach things. If I'm in your shoes, what would I do? Not that I'm the 100% answer man, but I do have some tools, and some of those tools are, they might be extreme. In fact, this tool that I'm going to share with you, I've talked about before, it's not really a tool, it's more like a mindset, a philosophy. But this is what I do in my own life. If things get so bad that I can't even leave my house, what's the point? What's the point? I know that it sounds defeating. It sounds dismal. What's the point if I can't even leave my house and I'm anxious about everything and everyone and I'm anxious about COVID and I have all this other stuff going on in my life? What's the point? This doesn't mean I'm giving you direction. I'm not telling you that at all. I'm setting you up for my response. But I really want to know. If life is all about being depressed and anxious, you know, you're anxious about things that are going on. COVID is now the new thing, but what's next? Monkeypox. What's after that? What's after that? There's always going to be something. So I'm looking at every issue in the world, and I'm thinking, if I'm just anxious about all this stuff, I have depression and I have all this other stuff too, what's the point? Now, before you go running off, I don't want you to run off with that thought, but I'm just giving you my perspective. This is how I think. What's the point of all this if I'm afraid of everything? Or what's the point of all this if I'm depressed? What's the point? What's the point? So I like to think like that at step one. What's the point? And then step two for me is thinking, I don't want to live like this. It doesn't mean I want to die. It doesn't mean anything like that. It just means I don't want to live like this. I want to move into some better feelings. I want to feel good. I don't want to be around people because they make me anxious. I don't want to be around outside in the environment because I'm worried about COVID or other diseases. What's the point of being here if I can't be around people and I can't be out in my environment? I don't get it. This is my thinking. I'm not putting it on you, but this is where I go. This is my philosophy. What's the point? I don't want to be in this place if all I do is worry. What is the point? So that's kind of my second step. If I have all this stuff going on, what's the point of living my day-to-day life and going to work just to come home, just to be isolated away from other people, away from friends and family? And now, you know, this person wrote their family had a big blow up because all this stuff's going on. And I'm not on anyone's side here. I'm just, again, giving you my philosophy. So that was kind of my step two. My step three is, okay, what's the worst that could happen? What's the worst? Okay, I get COVID and die. That's pretty bad. I get monkeypox and die. That's pretty bad. I don't think that happens, but it could. I get something else and I die. Or my mom dies. That's pretty bad. My mom dies because of something my relative did. That's pretty bad. I'd be upset. I'd be angry. That could happen. All of that. Absolutely. That could happen. And what could also happen? I'm asking you. What else could happen? Well, you're asking me if it's worse than that? Sure, let's go in that direction. What's worse than that? My mom dies and I die. And my brother and my sister and all my other family die. Well, that's pretty bad. Okay, let's just say that happened. Where do I go from there? I want you to get as bad as it can be. I want you to go into that state of mind. Oh my God, my mom died, my family died, and I also died in that scenario. But let's just say I didn't die. Now everyone's dead around me. Okay, that's pretty bad. That sucks. What happens? What's worse than that? I don't know. That's pretty bad. It can't get any worse. It can't? Are you sure? I'm going somewhere with this, I promise. But what I'm doing is leading you down my step three. You know, I don't think these are exact steps, but I'm just thinking about how I think. Where do I go from here? What's the worst case scenario? So keep going worse. Go worse. Go worse. I'm paralyzed from the neck down. That's pretty bad. What's worse than that? Wow. You know, somebody might be listening now. They are dealing with that now. And I'm not minimizing or invalidating anyone. I'm just telling you my thought process to help me get through moments or a lifetime of challenges or conditions that are limiting me in the world, that are causing me to isolate from the world. What's worse than that? What's worse than that? So what I'm doing is preparing my mind for the worst case scenario so that no matter what happens, it could never be as bad as I imagined. Because what do? We imagine how bad it could be. And then we imagine maybe it could be worse than that. But do we ever go to the extreme? Do we ever go to the point where we think, oh my God, what's worse than that? Because we don't want to get past that thought. We don't want to go past that one thought that is so bad that we couldn't handle it. I like to push myself further. Okay, it's so bad, everyone you love is dead. What's worse than that? That's a ridiculous question. I'm not even going to answer it because everyone I love is dead. Then what's the point? Aha. What's the point if everyone I love is dead? It's almost like this person who wrote is saying all the people I love are dead. Or how did I jump to that conclusion? I'm saying that as you eliminate people from your life voluntarily or involuntarily, as those people disappear from your life because of an argument, because of a blow-up, it's almost like they're dead. You can't see them any longer. And so my thinking is, what's the freaking point if they're out of my life or dead? Because it's the same thing. They're both the same to me. I can't see my family anymore because they're not in my life anymore because they can't stand being around me. So they're pretty much dead in my life because if they were alive, I could go see them. But now I'm in a place where I can't see them, so it's almost like they don't exist. I want them to exist. And this person has an opportunity. You have an opportunity for them to exist in your life. But you can't get past how bad it can get. You can't get past that awfulness, that the worst case scenario, how bad it could get, because you're so afraid, you know, with all due respect, you're so afraid, you have these insecurities or these fears that you're holding on to that are absolutely causing you to be more and more isolated from the world. And why are you isolating yourself from the world? Why are you isolating yourself from people that, quote, don't follow the rules or won't listen to you and, you know, make it safe for you and people you love? Why are you isolating yourself so much where this happens? I'm not putting the blame on you. I'm just asking you to consider this. Because my step four, is it step four? My step four in all this is accepting that it could get worse, yet going to the point, you know, the point, what is the point? The point is having meaning and purpose in my life and being with the people I love. And my step 4.1, I guess, is to look at my priorities and reprioritize how bad it could get with what I really want in my life. Because right now, in this scenario, I'm focused on how bad it could get. And I'm prioritizing that. I'm prioritizing how bad it could get. So-and-so could die. I could die. The world could end. That's my focus, my worst case scenario. I just brought it all up, put it all on the table. That's what it is. I can see it. And now I have this other side of the things, going on. The other side are all these people in my life and the world at large. My environment, I want to go outside, but I can't because I'm anxious. I'm worried about COVID. I want to do things in my life, yet I have this problem. I don't want to get COVID. I don't want to spread COVID. I don't want my mom to get it. I don't want my dad to get it. Whatever it is. Very real. I'm not minimizing or invalidating that. These are real issues. And getting COVID may compromise you. Getting COVID may compromise someone you love. I'm not here to argue that at all. I'm just helping you with a different perspective that we tend to prioritize what we don't want instead of going for what we do want, because we're so afraid of what we don't want happening that what we do want kind of fades away and dies anyway. There's a between the lines in here I'm hoping you're reading, and I'm not saying this is a cure for anything. I'm not saying that you should even follow this direction. I'm just giving you a different way to think about this, because sometimes we eliminate good things in our life because we're so afraid of the bad things happening to us. And I like to go down the worst case scenario to imagine those bad things happening to me. In fact, I didn't even take you down this path, but I like to think about it this way. The worst case scenario is, what bad thing could happen to me that I don't want to happen? My girlfriend dies. Terrible. I mean, I've thought about this. I look at her and I think, oh my God, what would it be like if she were gone? It would be awful for me. And I know people whose partners have died. And I think about that and I just, oh, it's so hard to imagine. And so I put myself in that state of emotion, state of mind, and I imagine what it would be like to be there. It's terrible. It sucks. I don't like doing it, but I do it. Because what's worse than that? My girlfriend dies, I lose my house, my parents die, and then I lose my legs in an accident. Wow, that's like getting worse and worse. Okay, what's worse than that? So I bring myself through this place. And then I was telling you I do more with the what's worse than that scenario is I imagine the next day after it happens. So my girlfriend dies. What am I doing the next day? Nothing. I'm crying. I'm doing nothing. I'm just crying, and I'm miserable. Okay, what am I doing a week later? Well, you know, I think I'm over in the initial impact, but now I'm lonely. And so I'm going through this worst case scenario. And then what am I doing a month later? Am I finally starting to have one tiny little happy day here and there? Probably not. Maybe it's going to take me months. And so I think along the lines of once it branches out into a worst case scenario, what's the next day like? What's the next week? What's the next month? I imagine myself going through it. Not because I love torturing myself, but because I want to get through a moment or a condition that I'm feeling or that I'm in the moment. What I mean by that is if I was anxious, you know, if I were an anxious person and I felt anxiety and I really wanted to stop feeling that, I'm going to take myself to the place that what I fear coming true does come true. And I do that until I get to the point where it's almost like there's nothing left. Because after that, after I go through that scenario experientially, and I come back to today, and I have these options in front of me, I think, wow, it could get so bad. And here I am thinking, like, this minor issue in my life is going to be a big problem. But it's been so worse for me because I went through this entire worst case scenario thing. And so that helps me get into a different state of mind, different state of emotion. And when I'm in that different state, I can think a little bit clearly, a little bit more clearly. And that can help me move forward. I'm not saying that this gets rid of anxiety. I'm not saying anything like that. I'm just saying I start to prioritize things in a different way. Like I was saying, instead of prioritizing my fear, in this example, my fear of getting a disease, why don't I prioritize my time that I have left with my family? That may not work for you. I'm not saying it will, but this is where my mind goes. I want to figure out how to meet my meaning and purpose, and how do I do that? I do have to override my fears so that I can meet my meaning and purpose. And so that part of this process, the way I think, the way I change my mind, is very short, only a few steps, but it's very powerful for me because it changes where I'm focused. Now, I know what this person's saying. I don't want my mom to get COVID, no matter what you say. I don't want her to get COVID. And I want people to take me seriously. My anxiety and my depression and all of this stuff, my OCD, this is all real. Paul, you can't just dismiss all this stuff. It's real. I know it is. I know. And this is why I like to go to the worst case scenario, because when you have anxiety, when you have depression, I'm not sure so much about OCD, but when you have those two things at least, I like to ask myself, here's another process, when did it start? I've had it all my life. Okay, at what point do you think? 2 years old? Well, maybe, but I don't remember being an unhappy child. How about 4? Maybe it's 4, maybe it's 10. Maybe it is all your life. I'm not here to discount or dismiss that. But I like to ask myself that question. When did this start? What is my earliest memory of this starting? For me, if I had depression now, I would think, oh God, you know, I remember my stepfather holding me down that day, and it was awful. He was holding me down, and I didn't want to be held down, and I felt trapped. Wow, I have a connection to how I feel today, and I have that link to the past. Like I felt it, or at least I started feeling that way after that point. That's what I could probably pinpoint. When did I start feeling that way? And then another step through this process that I do is to think, okay, what am I anxious about? What am I afraid of happening? What do I fear? One of those questions. And so I might think, okay, my depression or my anxiety started when I was 4. And what do I fear today? And is it related to that? Because if it's related to that, my brain starts to rationalize and say, well, if it is related to that, has that been a problem in my life? Have I talked to anybody about it? Have I expressed it? Have I told anyone of my fears or my shame or my guilt or my embarrassment? or any of the negative feelings? How about my hatred? I used to carry around hatred and I didn't even know it. In fact, hatred caused me to be depressed. I didn't even know I was holding on to it, but here I am walking around thinking, okay, I'm just depressed. I don't know how to get out of it. And then suddenly I realized, oh my God, I hate my stepfather. But wait, I didn't allow myself to hate. And this is one thing that can cause, or at least one step in a cause of depression, is that we repress what we don't want to feel, or we repress what we don't think we should feel. I hated my stepfather so much. I repressed that. I did not want to feel that because I thought it was wrong. And so what I did was create all this resistance in my body by repressing how I really felt. That'll do it. Repress how you really feel and you will become depressed. I'm not saying it's the only way. I'm not saying it is the perfect formula. I'm just saying it can happen. It happened to me. Repress how you really feel. Don't express it, especially if you think you shouldn't. That's a multiplier on all this. If you repress how you really feel, and then on top of that, think you really shouldn't feel that way, you amplify, you multiply and amplify the feeling, or at least the repression. Because this is how I look at depression. The thoughts that you suppress and the emotions that you repress lead to depression. That is the three-step formula for some forms of depression. Maybe a lot of them. Maybe most of them. But that's how I look at it, is that if I'm feeling depressed, what am I suppressing? What am I repressing? Because this is what's happening. So when somebody tells me they're depressed or anxious, I just like to ask the question, when did it start? And what are you afraid of now? What do you fear now? Not that depression always has to do with fear, but anxiety sure does. And what would happen? This is another question. What would happen if what you feared came true? And this leads me out of anxiety when I think about it, the full path of what would happen if what I feared came true. If you haven't heard my episode on letting go of attachments, part one and part two, I actually have, there are not episodes anymore, they're articles. I actually have an article called Letting Go of Attachments, part one and part two, at theoverwhelmedbrain.com. Just type the word attachments in the search field, or letting go, or something like that. And I talk about how I was driving in the desert and I had all my stuff in my car and I was 1,000 miles from home and my car broke down. And I experienced my first and last panic attack. I was so afraid of losing my stuff. I was so attached to it. I didn't want to lose my stuff. I didn't want to lose my car. And I was going to do anything I could do to save it. And I ran into some issues with that because my wife and I were broke. This was a time where we did not have much money when I was married. And I was broke. I couldn't get back. And my wife was suggesting things. And I said, no, I can't leave my car here. I can't leave my stuff in my car. I had thousands of dollars worth of stuff because we had just moved. And I was not prepared to let anything go. And so my panic kept rising and rising and rising. And I did not want to face the fact that I was going to lose everything. I didn't want to face it. And it wasn't until I faced it that my anxiety went away. A panic attack is like the buildup of anxiety that continues and continues until you think you're going to die or have a heart attack because it's so bad that you don't want something to happen. You're afraid of it happening. You're so afraid of it happening that you freak. You just don't want it to happen. And the problem with anxiety, and especially panic, is that if what you fear doesn't happen, you get to keep your anxiety and your panic. Now, the panic goes away, but you definitely get to keep your anxiety. Panic will come back later. But if it doesn't happen, you get to keep it. And the one thing I learned is a very spiritual moment for me. The one thing I learned is that when what you fear finally comes true, there's no more to fear. And that changed my life. And I was able to let go of everything. I let it go. I was no longer attached to material items. I like material items. I like owning stuff. I like having stuff. I like buying stuff. But when it comes down to fearing losing it, that's gone. I would hate it. I would be mad if somebody took it, but I don't have the fear anymore. If I walked outside and my truck wasn't there, would I flip out? I might. But would I go into the fear mode that I used to have? And so this is what changed for me way back when. And I tell that story on that article. This is important. When you have anxiety, you usually fear something being true. For example, social anxiety. You walk out, you're in public, and people are looking at you, or you think they are. People are judging you, at least you think they are. And they're going about their business, but you know they're going to look at you in a moment and probably think something about your hair, your earrings, your tattoos, your pants, your shoes, you know, anything. Probably think about your body size or the way you look. They're going to say things. They're going to think things. This is what the anxious person does, or at least social anxiety. They think other people are thinking about them, and okay, let's just say they are. This is my worst case scenario. How bad is that? First of all, they're thinking of me. They're judging me. Okay, how is that a problem? Another question I like. How is it a problem that they're thinking of you or judging you or criticizing you or saying they hate you in your mind? How is that a problem for you? Well, if they hate me, I don't want to be unloved. I don't want to be unliked. I want to be accepted. But you're just assuming they're not accepting you. Yeah, what if I'm thinking about them judging me and putting me down or criticizing me or making fun of me? That I don't know if I can get past that. Why not? Well, I don't want people to not like me. Why? Why do you have to be liked? What? I want to be liked. Don't you want to be liked, Paul? Of course I do. But if I'm not liked, how is that a problem for me? See, there's some deeper stuff going on here. And it's important to get to that deeper stuff. Okay, let's just say I'm not liked. What's worse than that? I'm hated. Okay, let's just say I'm hated. What's worse than that? They break into my house and they kill me. Wow, that's pretty bad. Okay, what's worse than that? I'm dead. Well, what's worse? I don't know. I guess once I'm dead, that's it. Yeah, but what's worse than that? I don't know. I end up in hell if there's a hell. Okay, what's worse than that? Whoa, that's too deep. I don't know. And then I think about this for a minute and I think, okay, what if they do hate me and they want to kill me and then I'm dead? I guess what I feared coming true became true, at least in my imagination, and now what am I anxious about? See, I look at anxiety and panic as the ultimate fear of pain or death. We have an ultimate fear of pain or death. When we're anxious, you may think that you're anxious about a certain thing, but the ultimate fear, like the deepest fear, in my opinion, goes to pain or death. I fear pain or death. And once you accept that pain or death could come, and that's fine. I know it's a strange way to think. But once you accept that pain or death could come to you, and you're okay with that, suddenly you don't have any fears, or at least most of your fears should go away. If what I'm saying is true. Because when we fear, we always are driven by that fear. We make decisions based on that fear. So I've taken you some different places today, and I've given you, or at least the person who wrote, I've given you something to think about. I'm not saying that you have to do anything differently. I am saying that sometimes we miss out on so much in life because we're so afraid of things happening. That will they ever happen? I don't know. But if we spend most of our life trying to prevent things that may never happen, we miss most of life. The meaning and value in life tends to disintegrate and disappear. And the people we love tend to fade away because we are putting more meaning and value in what we fear than what we want. You know, we want, if you want, love and connection. I want love and connection. I want to be outside. I want to be able to go through the store without worry. I'm not saying you do what you can. You should certainly do what you can. If you fear getting COVID and you want to wear your mask. If you want to get a shot, get a shot. I'm not here to tell you what you do. I just want to let you know that sometimes we override the meaning and the value in life with our own fears, and then we miss out what we're living for. I'm not saying to this person who wrote, I'm not saying that your relative was right for blowing up on you. I'm not saying that you're wrong for considering your mom's health. I'm just saying sometimes what we fear overrides what we value, and we just have to be careful that we're not eliminating all the value in life just because we're afraid of something, because the fear takes away the meaning of life. And when it takes away the meaning, what's the point? Full circle. What's the point? So that's a philosophical view of this. It's not direction. It's not guidance. It's just a way to think of things. And you may say, well, that still doesn't help because I'm still afraid. And if that's the case, you know, like I said, this might involve a one-on-one with somebody. This might involve therapy. It might involve sharing your worst, darkest fears with someone just to get them out of your system. Because I fully believe in getting this stuff out of your system. And if you don't get it out, you suppress your thoughts, you repress your emotions, you become depressed, you probably become anxious because of that too. I don't know what the OCD thing is for you. I don't know how it works for you, but maybe that's affecting you too. I don't know if there's medication for that, but these are the things that you want to consider. Do your preventative stuff, and also don't miss out on what could be more of life. Am I telling you to get over it? No, definitely not. This is not something you just get over. This is real. I believe you. It's absolutely real. I've been there. I know what it's like. But I also know if I had these fears and I couldn't see my family and it was preventing me from enjoying my time with the people in the number of years that I have left over and the number of years they have left over, then I'm missing out on a lot. And I know what you're thinking, maybe, is that, Paul, you're really telling me to just get over my fears and see them anyway because that's what is more valuable and that's a higher quality of life. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just telling you to think about this in every way possible so that you come up with your own decisions and your own conclusions. And I'm not excusing the behavior from one of your relatives. They should not have been that angry. They should have honored you. You said you feel misunderstood and vilified. I'm with you. I hear that. They should honor your requests, honor your wishes. And if they don't, then at least come to a compromise. Oh, I understand. You want us to wear a mask? Great. We'll wear masks around you. That would be nice. It's honoring somebody else's request. And then they might think, yeah, but you're dishonoring us because we don't want to wear our masks. Well, then there's no meat in the middle. Where is the meat in the middle? Okay, let's talk with glass partitions in between us. That may work. I guess one of you will be in jail with a glass partition. That could work. But I understand what you're saying. You feel misunderstood. And, you know, I could say this to you. I could say, hey, just honor yourself. And if they don't like it, that's tough. That is an answer. I could just stop this segment right now and say that's the answer. If they don't like it, that's tough because you know yourself well enough to know your own boundaries, what you will and won't accept in your life. And I could tell you, just say that. If you don't like it, that's tough. That's who I am. I love my mom. I don't want her to get sick. And you are dishonoring my mom. Absolutely. If you want to do that, I'm all for it. I'm 100% on board with that. What I'm trying to do is give you a way of thinking that you may not have had before or may not have done before. because you've probably explored your anxiety and your depression and the OCD in every single way possible, but maybe not this way. And all I'm doing is giving you another option to consider, putting it on the table so that you're not limited to what you've already read, to what you've already thought about, so that it expands your mind in a way that even if you don't listen to anything I say, your mind is now capable of making a different choice. And it could be in an entirely different direction than I was maybe what you think is implying. You could go in an entirely different direction. And if you do, great. I love self-empowered, self-initiated thoughts and action, because what that does is prove to yourself that you can do it. And I believe you can do it. You can do it. And I want you to get through this. I want you to enjoy life. I want you to have more meaning and quality in your life. And you can do what I have laid out here if you want. You can go an entirely different direction. You can think about your boundaries and say, you know what? I don't care what they say. I honor me. I care about me. I care about my mom. If they don't like it, that's tough. You lose people in your life when you do that. Honoring yourself is a path that will filter out the people that don't honor you honoring yourself. So that's why I didn't necessarily go in that direction. I could have. And I know people have already turned this off thinking that I wasn't. Why didn't you just tell her to honor herself? Too bad if they don't like it. I hear you. I agree. So you can go in that direction too, but I wanted to give you more options, and I hope this has been helpful. Thank you so much for writing, and I do wish you the best with this. You will make it through this in one way, shape, or form, because you're thinking about it, you're reaching out, you are doing what you can to see what else is possible, and I hope this gives you more possibilities. Thanks for writing, and thanks for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. We'll be right back with my thank yous and my goodbyes and my final words right after this. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I want to thank the patrons of the week. These are our financial sponsors, Andy, Walter. They're not really sponsors. They're our financial backers. That's what I wanted to say. Andy, Walter, Christy, Adriana, Leela, Anna. All of these people give once a month in the patron program, and I read new names every week. Patrons of the week, I appreciate each and every one of you. Thank you so much. And of course, people have donated. I've received a couple more donations than normal, and I am flabbergasted. I'm surprised, and I'm honored, and I'm humbled. Thank you, Leslie. Thank you, Crystal. I thanked a couple people last week, too. I am very grateful for your donations, and I appreciate everyone that offers any type of financial support, because that is a choice. That is a choice that you are certainly not obligated to, and I don't try to make you feel guilty for not. I don't even talk about it. I just mention it at the end of the show if you want to do it. Totally up to you. If not, be happy. Enjoy life. Don't think about this show. Keep moving. Keep moving forward. But if you do think about this show and you find value in it and you want to give back, you can do that as well over at moretob.com. Just like these people did. Thank you so much, patrons and those who donated. Your support is very much appreciated and heartwarming. Thank you again. And for a podcast on how to deal with difficult relationships, I host another show called Love and Abuse. You can head over to loveandabuse.com, and that will tell you all about control and manipulation and difficulties in communication. I think it's a very helpful show for anyone in any type of relationship, whether it's romantic, platonic, friendship, coworker. Anytime there is emotional abuse, control, or manipulation in the relationship, I talk about all kinds of subjects over there. loveandabuse.com. And if you know you're the difficult one in the relationship, I have a program to help you out that will improve your relationships. I mentioned it at the very beginning of this episode. Go to healedbeing.com and you'll find what literally is a life-changing program. People in that program have given me their feedback, and you can go to that website and see all the feedback. It is changing people's lives. It is changing people's relationships. healedbeing.com. And finally, thanks to Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. And for my final words, I'm going to keep it really short because this is sort of an extended episode. I talked about COVID in this episode. I haven't talked about COVID. I haven't talked about current events. I haven't talked about a lot of stuff, mainly because, God, we hear so much about it. We are exposed to all of this every day. And I don't mean to not address it, but, you know, we do hear about it. We read the news. We hear from our friends. We hear about all this stuff all the time. And I like to keep this content, I like to keep what I talk about accessible and usable for anything going on in your life. But who knows? COVID may be here for the long term. So maybe it is a good idea to bring it up once in a while because it does affect our lives. I mean, just today I went to the supermarket and what had been everyone without masks, now 20 or 30% of the people are wearing masks. And I thought, oh, here we go again. You know, I think of this stuff too. I think about, well, do I want to continue doing this for the rest of my life? Is this what life is going to be about? Is this how life is going to progress? Is that we'll eventually all be wearing these full toxic suits, you know, these radiation suits that prevent you from getting radioactive poisoning or something? And are we going to be wearing our full hazmat suits because all we want to do is live? That's what it seems like. I just want to live, so I'm going to go to the grocery store in my hazmat suit and do some shopping, come home, wash and sterilize my fruits and vegetables, and then hopefully get to eat them without getting sick. Wow, I hope not. It sounds like a very dismal future. What's worse than that, Paul? Well, that's a good question. Maybe someday I'll have to go there. I hope not. I hope none of us have to go there. But that's what I was thinking as I walked into the grocery store this morning, is that here we go again. Here we are doing it again. Not all of us. Some of us don't, and some of us do. But it did make me think about what we just went through and how everyone was required to wear masks, and some people didn't want to wear masks, and some people don't want to get vaccinated. All good. I'm not here to say you're right or you're wrong. I'm not here to talk about that. I'm here to talk about how we can get through tough situations, how we can be as healthy as we can be, how we can approach life with the most amount of emotional intelligence and the ability to get along with as many people as possible if we can. Because sometimes we can't. This person who wrote in the last segment, maybe her relative just doesn't like her. And no matter what she does, even if she's perfect, she's going to get crap for it. Sometimes you can't please everyone, so you just keep moving along. There's nothing you can do. Some people will never, ever be happy, and sometimes we just have to accept that. So that could be another way to look at things. You're not going to be able to please everyone, that's for sure. I know that. I know doing this show for almost 9 years now, I can't please everyone. People have said some pretty awful things about me, and the majority of people have supported me, but every now and then, someone will listen to 10 minutes of an episode, maybe this one, and think, wow, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about, giving bad advice, and is going to cause people to feel unhappy and suicidal. And there's nothing I can do about those people. They already have a cognitive bias as soon as they listen, maybe. Or they do listen with an open mind, and they don't listen to enough of it, or they don't really want to hear it, or they hear parts of it, and they don't get really the underlying message that I'm trying to convey, which is, geez, I want you to have the best life possible. I want you to feel like the best version of yourself. I want you to live life to the fullest and feel empowered so that you can make decisions that are right for you. Because a lot of the times we make decisions that are right for other people, but not for us. And when we do that, that's when life starts to go downhill. I'm not saying always. I mean, sometimes we do make decisions that are right for other people and not right for us, and our life improves because their life improved, and because their life improved, it improved our life. There are things like that. There are situations like that. But I do hope that you get value from this show and what I talk about, and I appreciate you. I appreciate you listening. I mean, here I am rambling at the last minute. And all I need to do is say, keep an open mind. That's how you step into your power so that you can create the life you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve. You are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you, you are amazing.